mastered.
The new mantra.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is a new mantra she has mastered.
Nope. Is that
there is nothing like it. You know. You really got to hear Ginger do it because she really has mastered it.
I don't know why you make me do this, but I'm more than happy to do it for you, Dono. It's called Tibetan Overtones. Have you heard Tibetan Overtones?
Only by Miller Rabe.
Well, I finally learned how to do it, and it goes like this. Just a minute, I have to really get into this. I'm horny.
Just a bit in overtones. Congratulations, the star.
Thank you. I've worked many years
You did pretty good.
But it's perfectly how it comes out, but if you never understand what they're saying, you know, that's what it sounds like. I'm warning you.
Oh, yo, what the nuts I am. I remember that one now.
That's the second verse.
Yeah. Oh, what the nuts I am. And it's spelled in such a way that it looks like, oh, wa, ta, na,
siam.
Ta, wa, ta, siam. Yeah.
Siam.
Yeah, siam is the end, right.
What a goose I am.
Is that
what a goose I am.
Was it goose? Oh, the way I first saw it was, oh, what a nice I am.
Oh, what a nice
I am.
Nine times out of ten, this may sound strange. If you really get down to the translation of these words into English, it comes pretty close to what a nice I am. Because the way they would describe it, and it, because I run into some strange thing like that over the years, with these swamis, and hear them translate, and I'm laughing to myself. And this is tantrum yoga. The words, and the way they're translating it, and to them it's very sacred. But the comedy in me is to see how the thing relates in English, because you really get rid of your frustration if you only look at things a little more comical. They're doing it to get rid of frustrations. And yet, in English, the frustration is in the comedy of the pronunciation of the word. So, in the Mongolian, he's saying, I am left out. In English, he would like to do it now. You see, it's like maka high. Then if you really repeat it, it says make it high. but it translates to mean the utmost in life. What the hell? Make it high is still the utmost in life. However, you look at the doggone thing. What made me laugh at many of the things that I grew up in, repeating. And then you look twisted wrong in English, you're saying the same thing to yourself.
Get a lift out of life. Wear a bra. I didn't say restriction, I said lift.
Right.
She says, I have a banner around the house. And he says, I got a whiff from the chimney. Around the house, and when he was coming out from the farm to the house, he said, I just got away from the chimney. What is a band around the house for the wife?
A husband.
Good, a house band, right?
Yeah.
That's why she married for a house band. And what does he marry when he comes out of the farm to come home in the afternoon? It's the cooking that comes out of the odor. So he says he got a whiff. Mm-hmm. He's going off to the whiff. He's going off to his wife.
That's a good version of the song.
So we call it tantrum yoga. Union of your tantrums. Release yourself from the frustrations. Well, I put it this way. Life would be pretty boring and frustrating if you take everything so serious. If God is God, he kind of got some humor someplace.
Yeah,
the hum or fume.
Donald, what does playing wind instruments do for, or does it build your lungs? Blowing out under pressure.
Well, you get more back pressure.
Putting
so
that back pressure.
Open your alveoli.
The purpose behind the blowing of the instrument is to clear the upper portion of the mouth, which is not but a tube right down to the anus. But it's coiled up in such a way that it's only constriction and dilation is interacting with an accordion. Mm-hmm. So, functionally, when you're hooked up in your mother to the umbilical cord, her breathing sets up the auscultation, but you don't breathe on your own through your lungs. And your anus is locked in so that nothing comes pumping out. So everything is stored back in. Now, when you come out after the cord is cut, you have an urgency to blow or pull in. Well, a breath-free person is a dead person. But a breathless person is a self-regulated living person. And if you learn the art of breathlessness, that's what the yoga science is, all it calls it, breath science. You extend the regulation of the constriction dilation of the organs, that you maintain their regenerative reactions. So you automatically have a cleanup and a utilization by the extension of the time frame between the inhalation and the exhalation. So the length of time in between, I call it a pause. So if a monkey, they use a monkey's a ratio of 32 inhalation exhalation pauses in 1 minute. That gives the monkey a 32 to the minute, a lifespan of 9 years as the ratio of lifespan for a monkey. Now a turtle, his oscillation pattern is 4 to the minute, and he has a lifespan of around 300. So if you got these two measurements to look at, you're the human being coming in with a max of 16, and sometime maybe 10 as a min. You can now function between 70 to 80. But then if you want to increase on past that point, you'll find that elderly people who are going past their 80-year mark are breathing slower, deeper, and longer. Mm-hmm. And this is the progressive part. So yogis have then observed this, but they say to do it by avoidance or by sickness is not healthy because these are fixations. It's to do it by conscious understanding. So they set up a time frame to clean up the body and organize it so you have what is called an ongoing cellular balance in the body. So it's a self-replenishing principle. So today now the doctors are looking at this reality and they're looking at one more thing. A quick jolt of a battery charge into the body would wake up a dead man. There's a certain amount of voltage you got to hit the heart to activate it. So all your CPR people now are being carrying these devices now to give the heart a jolt to reactivate it. But again, it's getting the person to breathe. So the mouth-to-mouth resuscitation is valid in the daytime, but it don't work at night because you don't need oxygen in the mouth right away. You need carbon dioxide to deactivate. It's one. In other words, at night you need a suction pump principle. A yawn is a suction pump. A yawn doesn't really get rid of carbon dioxide, but it acts as a suction pump for the carbon dioxide to move out of the body. So you want something to lock and pull back at night. In the daytime, you go right away to the mouth and let them suscitate. Nighttime, you need to blow and then come back. In other words, they have to use their own as a suction because that's what happened at night. It locks in. But they haven't switched their training program yet, so still having a lot of DOA. In a gallbladder attack, usually. That's nighttime. But daytime, no problem. But I always correct that very fast. So, the period between the breath is the longer. So somebody used to say Napoleon had appendicitis or gallbladder problems because he used to walk with his hand here. It wasn't true. Napoleon was slowing down his breathing by pressing upon his ascending colon. Because if you're a general, what are you going to do? Breathe fast or slow? Well, you got to make decisions. You've been in the military.
You don't breathe fast.
Up all night.
Right. So when you're planning a strategy, you up all night. So
well, he could sleep on his horse. That was well.
Yeah, but this is how he discovered his own ability to resolute his body by pressing in on his tummy. Well, that they didn't. Many of the people didn't know that. They thought he was a sick man or whatever. But really, he was doing this technique of pressing to slow down his own body. No, and Churchill did the other one. He would close his eyes for every 10 minutes to the hour. That was his technique. So around the clock, he appeared to be up and working. But what he was doing is taking 10 minutes on the hour. And his own doctor, Dr. Morant, who was a top-notch surgeon, but was a highly educated yogi in India. He had studied yoga at the Ankabak, and he was part Indian and English. He understood what that Churchill would do.
I was wondering also, here we are, right on the edge of the 1990s now, and already we're seeing the fragmentation of the governmental systems. Like in Russia, all of the states and regions of the different ethnic cultures are saying, you know, we want to run our own show. And here, it's like people are moving towards getting fed up with inefficient utilization of our tax monies. And astrologically, there's supposed to be like a big upheaval of some type in the 90s. And I was wondering, just more or less what you see happening in the 90s, for the 90s.
Well, he took a class in internal astrology. I gave it before.
You've done that here too at midnight one time.
Were you here at that class? Hmm? I gave that class on what's coming up for the Aquarian cycle. If you're not in a no way to go tonight, maybe you can talk it after supper. What is the class today?
It's solar 2 starting at 11. As soon as that's over, then everybody's breaks, then they rejoin at 8 o'clock. So whenever you end solar 2, up to you.
At 8 o'clock we can talk the internal astrology.
Good boy.
Sorry. Begin to recognize what the internal astrology has projected already. So there's the external astrology going on. Mm-hmm. There's an internal one that is running the internal conflict. And that's already set up. So after the class and after supper, we talk to the internal astrology.
In other words, do that instead of solar 3, or do both. Do the internal astrology. Yeah.
No, we can do a solar 3 too. Yeah.
Set for 8.
Set for 8. So that's before. Okay.
We'll get 2 and 3 covered and done with it, and then out of the way. So then we'll do the astrological thing last. Don't you live now?
Definitely.
I don't know, isn't it that the 4 hours of the clock, which organ is going to get priority over 2 hours? Everyone's got 2 hours assigned to them. What time of the day is it now?
Almost now? Nine.
This is good. And this is biological time, because they don't change it here, right? Good. So you're supposed to be the end of the stomach. So did you just eat a good meal in the last hour or so? So now you're getting ready for the digestive action of the spleen to come in and take over. So if your spleen is going to take over, what's going to be now? More zest, more vitality, more willpower, or you're going to suffer from sugar blues? See? How you correct your sugar blues? You got it right here in your cup. Your hormone balancer. At 10 o'clock, you can have your hot orange. This perfectly lined up. You see, the thing is this, I have to laugh at the whole thing after over the years of seeing it. So comical. We haven't gone into where we see the sonics, the actual sonics that regulate the organ. We've done the biosonic workshop, but you realize if you look at the biological clock, there are certain sounds that represent the scale assigned to certain organs at certain times of the day. They wouldn't be there if they weren't there for certain reason. An organ is actually only existing because of the sonics. The geometry of the organ, made of minerals, and the different quantity of the minerals, are all dependent to hold their shape and form by a sonic. So the heart, when they transplant it and it doesn't bond to the pericardium and the kidney fails to shunt at 6 o'clock, what happens to the heart transplant? All right, nurse over there. When they take the heart out from the patient, they have to separate it from the pericardium, right? And when they put it back in, you have to bond it to the pericardium. But the pericardium is the original pericardium, and the heart is your stranger. Right? So the shunt is the liver, and so they hook up to the dialysis. The dialysis will work and work, but the pericardium isn't interacting with the actual new heart, because that's where they're supposed to. Until you can get the frequency of the pericardium to transfer. Right, exactly. So then they'll bond. That's the thing that's been missing so long, to get the two frequencies to. So that's what the heart transplant needs. So now the new thing is, since they're not making successful heavy with it, they're going to cut into the heart itself and take out the decomposing valve area and put in a plastic valve and leave the heart hooked back to its own original pericardium, stitch it back, and then reshunt back the blood through. So instead of losing the heart now, the heart can be open, it'll still be pumping, but it won't be pumping efficiently, but the blood can be shunted through a workable device to keep it going through the body while they take out the area and then make the installation of a plastic install and then close it back, and then the blood will work through the heart using the plastic insert, like a pin. But you'll have the original tissue onto the original pericardium, instead of taking the whole thing away from the pericardium. And that's basically, but if you look at the biological clock, you will see you have some notes going around the clock. And that's what knocks it off, because as soon as you touch one, you break. It feels like somebody cut a string on a guitar or cut a string on a piano. What happens? If you play music, suppose you're playing music and all of a sudden one is string break. And that's exactly what happens to the body. The frequency disengages to the connective tissue. But we don't look at it that way. Years ago, today we're looking at it more and more as the connected relationship with all the physics, because the scanners are the ones that are making it more obvious, especially with Neptune and craft that they've brought on Neptune. They noticed two things, that the craft was bouncing off a sound from the pressure coming close to Neptune. But Neptune was already giving off his own pressure by turning, and then they picked these two things, and they came in both as sound and light. But at light, they could see the waves. But they couldn't understand why the sounds were like that crazy, weird. It was going on like that all the time. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, yeah, you can sit here. I've got to go make a phone.
You're number one?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I want to say that they entertain the king and all these things. But in those days, those minstrels weren't so sophisticated making songs to entertain in words. They were looking for the basic song structure that the body would resonate to. Mm-hmm. So they were closer to what we would say biological resonance. So they'll walk in a room, hit a few songs, and the whole room will resonate with the chick, will feel good, and his anger will be gone. And that's what used to happen to Saul and David. So we have to go back to those guys and look at some of the things. If they had recorded some of the things that David had played on his harp, we would find they're going to match the resonances of the tissue. Okay. So some rabbi friend of mine is looking it up now. He says that makes more sense to him, because he can't understand how could David be playing in those days. And they weren't so sophisticated to play what we call music today.
Yeah.
They had to be playing something very fundamental to the body. So you should try to locate them in some of the scrolls.
It wasn't for entertainment.
No. But this flight recorded by a craft coming closer to Neptune, and the song that came off of it
the Voyager, the one that Voyager, just went out
yeah.
there?
Yeah. The songs are not normal songs. And they're too high range, but what is unusual of it, as you listen to it, unless you know alternate technology or alternate things, you wouldn't recognize it. But when I heard it the first time, I recognized what you, if you take the mantra that you're given in the initiation and increase it to a very high pitch frequency, that's the sound, it's little it matches yeah. up. And you can hear it. And that's why the Eastern teachers would call it audible live stream. And then you begin to become more aware of what they're talking about. They're not talking of music. They're talking of resonances in the air, a different pitch and length of time. And as they work their way in, so they sit back and listen to it. And you walk in their presence and they say, well, they're meditating.
They're not just listening with their ears.
Right.
They listen to their own. Again?
They listen to their own biology. So, if you, the quickest way to recognize it, and I found the way I recognized it years ago, is when I took a 24-hour fast. No water, no food, and just let the body utilize its own breathing and saliva. And sit down in the room to myself and listen to my body, feel it constricting, dilating as I breathe, and not try to force it to breathe. Just sit there in that reclining position. And to me, I like the oriental position up and down, but you get bored with it after a while. So if you can find a spot where you can actually, and that's why that modern chair that you got, that recliner is the best thing, you can really sit back and feel yourself. And that's exactly where the astronaut is in that position.
Yeah.
That's the best position, the couch.
That's so neat. That's why I've got
that
one in
that position, because you have a flow and you feel it, your skin pulsating, constricting and dilating. And then as you listen, don't try to analyze, listen, you'll hear it making sound. And the sound is identical by these sounds that they're getting off of the craft. It's so comical about the thing. And this is what the yogis were doing. They're calling it audible. Audible because it's amplified to a level where they can recognize it. Today we can take it off with a fiber microphone and amplify it and match it. And it's called live stream of cash. What is live stream? The elements in your body of a certain weight and pH factor moving on time all the time by the respiration. When you break the thing down into its actual facts, you are actually listening to the movement of your blood in a self-contained tissue container, rubbing against and making a pitch. And if you're not eating any food, it's going to force that blood and all those minerals to do what? Move on time. So basically, the sick person can get well by just listening to their body and fast for one day. 24 hours, if you eat 6 days a week, 6 days shall you labor, you'll eat 6 days, take the one day and give yourself a cellular rejuvenation. And that's what I discovered.
No water, no food.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we call it, animals do it and call it hibernation in winter time. When we go to space, what the hell are we going to do? Okay, young lady, that's a little bit.
Very big, huh?
Well, yeah.
Very macho. All right.
Magnesium is stored in the heart.
Vitamin C causes?
Vitamin C?
Lack of vitamin C.
Lack of vitamin C.
That's a new one. I don't
think that. Lack of vitamin C.
On time, the cramps, right?
What are you talking, man? It's iron.
Iron.
What's in vitamin C? Don't get fooled in the label because Mr. Smith makes candy. It's Mr. Smith. You eat it? Or candy? These are labels. You've got to remember, they're labeling a lot of these combinations, but basically, you get to the core of what the thing is centered on, then you find out what is actually missing. Well, it's the incorrect timing of the iron to the skin that constricts or oxidizes.
It tries to attract the iron into that area.
And therefore, they refer to it as a deficiency of vitamin C because the quantity of iron found in vitamin C is appropriate to the amount that is lacking in that area. So if you say iron is lacking in that area, it's very generalized, which is factual about the area, but I don't say what quantity. So by saying vitamin C, is an inference of the quantity ratio of the iron that is supposed to be there that is lacking. So you want a vitamin C quantity in the area of iron. So the core of vitamin C is iron, but in reference to vitamin C, instead of pure iron as an iron, is that ratio that forms around the ascorbic acid is missing in that area.
What's interesting is because of all the things I know for muscle cramps, and a few of them, I've never heard of vitamin C being utilized, but I can see where a lot of them are involved in vitamin C.
Yeah, but it's the percentage of iron.
Well, like E puts oxygen into the...
Yeah, but you see, E again is a label for a percentage of
selenium.
What? Selenium.
Which is an antioxidant which helps...
The minerals have different percentages in their weight and time movement from source to demand. And so they're given different labels. Now let's say you want selenium going at 0.5 milligram, so you call it a vitamin E. You want selenium going at 1.5 milligram, you're not going to call it a vitamin E. It's got another name. But to just say selenium is needed, wow, everybody's uptight. Selenium is toxic. You know, you see what I'm saying? And then if you're already realizing it's the quantity to the area on demand, the time, and the organ pattern, and then the surrounding elements that are going to travel with it to act as cushion. Remember you saw that picture, Miracle of Life? The one sperm that got to the ovum is cushioned by all the other two-tailed. But these are what they're talking about. So to say to somebody, oh, there are two-tailed sperms and three-tailed sperms, nobody believe you. They think you're full of glory. Yeah. But there never there was it actually what go to the point of bonding. They're there as a cushioning effect for the one together. So there's the same way that 1% or that minimum requirement of the basic mineral that's assigned. So that's when they start labeling that.
So what happened was I started taking the body toddy, but what I neglected to mention was I also started for the first time drinking prune juice. Remember the night I picked up the body toddy and you said something about prune? I said, I never knew we were supposed to eat prunes. And you said, oh, that's as basic as almonds in the morning. I said, oh, I don't know why I didn't know that. So I started drinking prune juice and with the body toddy. Like after I get done eating the fruit and the nuts, then I would drink that. And that's when I started having the muscle, Charlie horses in my legs.
What time of the day did you eat?
I don't know. Oh, I think in the afternoon.
Oh, you did prune juice in the afternoon?
No, I drank it in the morning. I think I had the
Oh, then you had the cramps in the afternoon. Oh, okay. Probably between noon and 4 o'clock.
Yes.
Where were the cramps?
Okay. So you're eating your lunch too late.
Eating lunch too late? Eat lunch at exactly noon every day. And breakfast at exactly 8 o'clock every morning.
And the cramps are always in your legs?
That only happened one time. Oh. One day. That's it. Never happened
again.
Oh,
that might be some kind of an adjustment.
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Are you still doing the prune juice?
Yeah. Time. That's forever, right?
Well, let me put it this way. You never used it before until that particular day.
Right, never. Never ate prunes, never drank prune juice.
Oh, is that speeded up the time that could cause something like that in the one
What you call the cramp was the shift in lactic acid to the muscle, instead of the muscle being delayed and flabby or flaccid by the lactic acid, it was forced to move faster now by the presence of iron.
And now, since I started drinking that prune juice, I don't have that terrible craving for ice cream.
Right. With lactic acid.
I used to just, remember I told you I wanted ice cream all the time. And now I don't.
Because the calcium in the lactic acid is moving fast away from the area of us and instead of stressing out the muscle.
And that Biotome, I've taken 2 bottles of that. Did you bring any with you?
I think there's some
more. Email?
I'm going to have Marcia send some.
Yeah, we can ship it up here. I have to see if they have more left.
Now, is that something that's just for therapy, or should you take that?
No, that's basic food.
Okay. Boy, I've been feeling really fantastic taking that and Biotone and KM. I've lost weight. You know, I feel so slim. I don't even know if I've lost weight, but I feel slim. Mm-hmm. No, like puffiness here. I used to have a big midriff, and now I don't. Just since I started that. Mm-hmm.
No love handles.
No love handles. What a label that is.
It's like one time. A lady came to me, and I told her about solar and whatnot. And after she was done, she said, I had told her that you could double your calories if you ate on time and lose weight. And she'd come for weight loss.
And she said, you're crazy.
What?
She said, you're crazy.
Yeah, not only that, dog, she said, you know, I really want to try this. So I'm going to really make an attempt. I'm going to eat everything on time, just like you say. But I think, and she about said the same thing, I think, where it's something like ludicrous or something, that you can lose weight by increasing the food. So I'm going to, for 1 week now, I'm going to stuff myself. I'm going to just eat food till it's coming out of my ears. And I'm going to come back and talk to you. 1 week later, she'd lost 7 pounds. And she'd tried all kinds of other methods and had lost. And she, in fact, like she walked in, she was noticeably thinner. She said,
no,
it's just, I stuffed myself.
You just said, who collect? You should have said, who collect?
Yeah, no, you did it better.
you came to her, she came back to pay you for her.
Yeah. Leave the check on the table.
I remember when that horse happened to a friend of mine. That was funny. He was well trained in the orthodox medicine. I would never believe such a thing as eating on time. That's a bunch of baloney. Was being told his wife. She was a nurse, and he's a doctor. He said, that's nonsense. Eating on time is going to make you lose weight. And the doctor said, yeah, you don't have to believe it. But check with your other personal friends, and she quoted the name of a person. So he called his friend, and the friend says, it may seem unorthodox, Harry, but if you would only get a try, you may not be so prone to go confront the person who is talking about it. Mm-hmm. That's my friend, Dr. Sheely, he's telling this guy. Anyway, Harry tried it for 1 week. And I will come in the area for 2 weeks. Harry shows up this Sunday morning. I want to see Mr. Lee. So, my horse, here he is. He looks at me. You're the guy? He says, well, of course I wanted to curse your ass, I'm not going to hug you, kiss you, and shake your hand. He said, it works, but I don't know how the hell it works. he lost the weight. And then he started to be interested in it. And then he starts speaking with his friend, Nakashini, comparing notes. It made more sense to him in the end when he took the first class. How it related to the light and the plant growth. And just to say that he fruit, it clicked in his brain that he saw the real pattern.
The interesting thing about this
Boulder Nutrition, but now I've been on it a year. And if I eat something, if the minute that I feel something different inside, I think, now what did I do? Didn't I eat something on time? And I can always trace it back to something that I ate, that's the reason I'm having gas or feeling nauseated. Or it's amazing. It comes up right away.
Well, it's the same like a engineer or a mechanic working on a piece of machinery. You put the wrong thing in, and then you're going to show up at the end of the line. And you got to go right back and take them out.
But it's so rapid. I guess it's because of practice that now you can really pinpoint it quickly.
So you're the first
appointment.
See you folks in a few minutes.